To our podcast audience, welcome. I am Keith Carson, member of the Alameda County Board of Supervisors. Today we're embarking on an opportunity to begin to have a dialogue on topics that are important to you, your family, and our community. Our podcast will share information on many important topics that are timely, important, and informative. Again, to all of you who are listening, you in Alameda County. I'd like to thank, first and foremost, Youth Radio for hosting us here at these fabulous facilities in downtown Oakland, which serves the Bay Area, operated and run by our youth here in Alameda County. I'd also want to say a special thank you to our guests, and I'll introduce them shortly, the people who will give you detailed information about our subject matter for today. And also, as important to me, I want to thank staff that I work with on a daily basis. Those are individuals who work daily to improve the quality of life for everybody here in Alameda County. And I want to say thank you for your hard work, especially leading us up to these podcasts. Today's subject matter for our podcast is really one that kind of starts life for all of us. And I thought it was good to start our podcast and on that note. And that issue is really early childhood development. And more specifically, we'll talk about expulsion rate for young people who are in preschool or going through early childhood development. I recall, I don't know if many of you out there in podcast world recall that there have been some commercials, one by Wonder Bread, that said basically the formulative years of life for those between 0 and 5 or 8, that's the developmental years for all of us. And so for Wonder Bread, they said eat Wonder Bread, but there's a lot of other good things that we should do. Just a short backdrop before we begin to talk about the subject matter, though. Early childhood is a time of tremendous growth across all areas of development. Physically, between birth and age 3, a child typically doubles in height and quadruples in weight. Bodily proportions are also those that start to develop. The head accounts for almost a fourth of the body length, and many people don't think of that. I mean, you focus on your child, but this is the beginning of life, and life not only affects your family, it affects all of those who come in contact with that individual as they continue to interface with all of us in our community. Between 3 and 5 years of age, children continue to grow rapidly and begin to develop fine motor skills. By the age of 5, children develop fairly good control of pencils and crayons and scissors. They also have the ability to skip and balance on one foot. And they continue to define and grow and operate. Also, you may not think about it, and again, I want to kind of set the stage for this morning's discussion, that over the first 3 years of life, children develop the spoken vocabulary. Between 300 and 1,000 words, 1,000 words become a part of their language and their vocabulary. And by the time of age 5, they are many times up to speaking 1,500 words. And they begin to use those words in sentences. They begin to tell familiar stories, understand pictures. And that's the developmental time that we're talking about. We also know that since that is a time in which they learn to speak and interface, that language being such a powerful tool to enhance the cognitive development says that that's when children begin to communicate and interface and begin to solve their personal problems and at that age. Now, many of us think that that doesn't happen until we're much older, but really that starts to happen between the age of 0 and 5. And also, social-emotional skills begin to develop. The ability to interface with individuals is starting to become a part of that child's behavior. Gender identification, a sense of right and wrong. All of those things happen between the age of 0 and 5. Well, I have the great privilege of serving on First Five, which is Alameda County's organization that helps children and families to understand these early developmental years and work with a number of community-based organizations to trying to make sure that the child could be the best that they can be, either through preschool or through in home development. And this organization in Alameda County has a great success rate. But there are incredible individuals who work with us in making sure that our preschool structure is the best and the leading one here in the state of California, if not the nation, and that we focus on that childhood development between the age of 0 and 5. The three important people that are my guests here on the podcast show are Pam Shaw, who is the executive director of the Berkeley Albany YMCA Early Childhood Services Branch that includes Head Start, Early Head Start, State Preschool, and Child Development Programs. And Pam has over 25 years as a teacher, administrator, trainer, and director. And Pam is almost 30 years old, and we're glad to have her here as one of our guests this morning.
Thank you.
We also have Marjorie Gutierrez-Padilla, and she is the program supervisor of the Early Childhood Consultation and Treatment Program, Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, the Early Childhood Consultation and Treatment Program, which provides early childhood mental health services to children ages 0 to 6 and their families in the home, child care programs, and also working with a number of clinics. And I want to say, Margie, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
And last but not least, a person who I see on a monthly basis at our meetings at First Five, Sajada Bensel, and she is the Early Childhood Mental Health Manager at First Five Alameda County. Every Child Counts. Every Child Counts is a program that supports health, development, and well-being of our youngest pediatrics, children, the colleges, and also the community projects is what Sajada works with on a regular basis. I'd like to say welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
One of the reasons why we're talking about early childhood development is because there was some astounding information that came out over the last several years through a study that was done by a PhD, Walter Gillian, pre-kindergarten left behind expulsion rate into state pre-kindergarten systems. And when I heard the information about this, I said that we have to get this out because there are more children who are expelled at pre-kindergarten than there are through K through 12. That's alarming. That is alarming. And what we know is that today about 58% of all 3- and 4-year-old children go through pre-kindergarten. Family daycare or some type of Head Start program. But pre-K students are expelled at a rate more than three times that of children in grades K through 12, according to the primary study by the researcher at Yale, and that their expulsion rate in pre-kindergarten programs serving 3 to 4 years old are the ones that he focused on. And these, again, are the early developmental times in a child's life. It really starts to set the ability to deal with a number of things. Pre-K increases high school graduation rate. Pre-kindergarten helps children do better in standardized tests. It reduces grade repetition. It reduces crime and delinquency. It lowers rate of teen pregnancy. It leads to greater employment and higher wage standard for those who reach adulthood. And I also know that $1 invested in high-quality pre-K saves taxpayers up to $7. But when you have a child being kicked out of pre-K, pre-kindergarten at that age, then you start to say, what's going on in our society? So the first question I have for our panel, and maybe I'll ask that Sajada kind of opens this up for the dialogue, and that would be that the study revealed that the communities of color are impacted in greater numbers due to expulsion. How can we better address this issue impacting lower wage families and families of color about pre-K expulsion? And describe it as you have studied this, these findings?
Sure. So what, one of the things that the study revealed, as Mr. Carson talked about, is that particularly African-American boys who are age 4 or 5 were at the highest risk for expulsion. I believe their expulsion rate was 10 times that of Asian-Americans and there are different variations between other ethnicities, but certainly the highest rate to be expelled. Another factor that came out from the study was that the highest rates of expulsion came from faith-based and private for-profit preschools. And so I think what, in order to address this issue, we have to look at what is going on in those systems that is not allowing the system to handle the child and to support that family. And what can we do to support, to provide supports for the families in the home when they're seeing these behavioral challenges themselves in the home or at the preschool? So I think a lot of the focus is really on prevention and not on waiting until the behaviors become such a large issue that people are starting to talk about expulsion. But what's going on even before any of that happens? So if we have a family that's having that has a child that has a challenging behavior, what kind of support is that family getting? What is available to them in their communities, from their own peers? Are there parent support groups? Are there play groups or socialization groups to help the child learn social skills? What can we do, accessing our local R&Rs, our resource and referral agencies, which often have many of these resources for parents and for families, but oftentimes families don't even know that these kinds of resources can exist for them. Additionally, at the preschools, what can we do to support the teachers to many people come into this field, into the early care and education field, with not a great deal of training in what it means to work with young children and support their child development, and what are all of the different levels of typical child development. And so what can be done to support those teachers, to give them that training, to allow them to direct families to the resources that are available in their communities as well?
Pam Shaw, you were at a place, the Berkeley Albany YMCA. Normally that facility is looked at on a national basis as kind of the community facility for where any and everybody can go. It's affordable. It's accessible to the community. If we were to kind of identify and say what might be the child that's expelled at that early age, how would you describe what might be looked at as that child, or the behavior that many people kind of jump to say, I can't handle, I'm not educated, I'm not qualified enough to handle them, I don't want them affecting other kids, so they're out of here?
So it would typically be a little boy, probably a 3 or 4 year old, most likely a 4 year old boy, typically African American or Latino, who has very aggressive, out of control behavior, lots of anger issues, may or may not have issues at home. Most likely the parent is in denial, which is hard to say about the issues at home, because they'll say, oh, I just put him in his room, where at school when they're with groups of children, you see a different kind of behavior. So it's a child who doesn't get along socially with other children. Probably a challenge across the board. I think it's the kind of child who's quite bright, who tends to push teachers' buttons so they can manipulate behaviors of other children. So it makes it more difficult for teachers, because they're sort of smiling and in their aggression. And so they're bringing other children along, which makes it more challenging for teachers to try and control their behaviors. And it's really difficult when teachers have high adult-child ratios to be able to control one or two children's behavior while they're trying to maintain control over a group of 10 to 20 kids in a classes. And most of our classes have 20 children with two or three adults in there. And one or two kids can throw off the balance of an entire class and wreak havoc. And then that causes stress for the teachers, which makes them more likely to want a child out of their environment or out of the classroom in order for them to be able to do what they need to do with the rest of the group. Our teachers feel under a lot of pressure. Head Start is putting a lot of pressure on getting kids ready. Our kids come in and a lot of them don't know their, basic pre-kindergarten readiness skills. So when they're trying to teach children or work directly with children to improve their skills and you've got one or two kids that are just disrupting the balance of that classroom, it's easier to just say, get them out of here, go away. I can't handle it.
Marjorie Gutierrez-Padilla is the program supervisor for the Early Childhood Consultation and Treatment Program at Alameda County, another one of those governmental organizations that kind of deal with the common person, the working class person, maybe even those who are not working. And what we have sometimes, not all the times, are mental health or behavioral challenges. How does a parent become aware of that even as they integrate a child into preschool or take care of them even at home? And how does the county find out about the needs of that parent and that child?
Well, as mentioned by our guests earlier, children are really in the developmental stages of mastering how to regulate emotion, how to tell somebody they're angry or sad, and how to manage their behavior. So this is framing it that this is the developmental task they have, and parents are working with this at home. So what occurs is that they go into group settings and they are at times expected to know how to manage their behaviors, or they're expected to know how to express their angry or sad or feeling neglected or needing attention. And what happens, of course, is at times the parents we work with who have many, many stressors, who are working daily with the stressors of being underemployed or unemployed, poverty, there's not enough money to make ends meet. Oftentimes there's domestic violence in the homes, not always. A lot of immigration issues. So these are families where children are of the utmost importance, but they get lost at times in the shuffle of the day-to-day stressors and challenges that the parents have. By the way, extended family is often very involved with the children. Grandparents are helping to raise children. Parents are often working two jobs and are gone long hours. So what happens is that kids are often in early care and education, in preschool, very long hours, as I think Pam mentioned earlier. And so parents at times are approached in the preschool setting with worries about the children, with frustration from the teachers, with very good reason, because as Pam mentioned, the teachers are working hard in a group care setting to manage behaviors, and they're frustrated. So, of course, the first place they go is to the parents or to the caregivers. And so parents at times begin to feel very discouraged or sort of singled out, especially if they're dealing with all the other stressors I just mentioned. And what can happen at times is a frustration or an alienation between some of the teaching staff and the parents on a day-to-day basis. Parents are made aware of these difficulties by the teachers, and then what can occur is that they're not sure where to turn. And that's where there is a lack of services, as Sujatha mentioned earlier, in early care and education. One of the things that the Gilliam study found is that classroom-based mental health consultation, which are services to the children, the families, and to the teachers and directors in the preschools, tended to decrease the chances of expulsion. So parents can access programs where there are early childhood mental health services, of which mental health consultation is one. However, there is not enough to keep up with the demand. And that's what we're working on in Alameda County, which we, in many partnerships in this county, for the last 10 years have been working very hard to build early childhood mental health services so that we have programs that intervene way, way before, in infancy, for example. So parents do have access, and parents and caregivers, to these services. However, if we take them out to the settings where the families are, to the early care and education, to the preschool programs, to primary care settings, to churches, to non-traditional settings, so that parents, number one, have easier access to services, but also don't feel the stigma that historically has been associated with mental health. Mental health for young children 0 to 5 is basically the social and emotional development of young children in their relationships with all of the adults around them.
So, Jada, I want to ask you this question. I would assume that there's a fine line for a parent, a guardian, a loved one of a child to be able to define or determine, even as that child enters preschool, that that child may be challenging. I mean, as children grow and develop, they're always energetic. They're always pulling. They're always moving around. And so I don't know how does one distinguish normal kind of behavior versus behavior that maybe needs a little bit more attention? Or in most cases, although I'm asking Sajada this, I'm throwing this out, in most cases, is it kind of picked up that the child is acting a little different than other children, because now you can have the ability to compare, and I don't mean compare in a negative sense, but be able to say, oh, there's something different here, when they come to either the Berkeley Albany YMCA, or you kind of hear about them, Margie, through your various programs?
That's an excellent question, Keith, and I think that that is one of the large struggles that parents, families, caregivers deal with, is the not knowing and the wondering. I think one of the things that always comes across for parents that they always want to know, is my child normal? Is there something wrong? And it's very hard for them to know that, because unless you are somebody who has a great deal of experience with child development or is working in the field or has been around kids an enormous amount, you wouldn't really know. You only have the experience of your own child. Many times, also, if you're a first-time parent, for example, not knowing what the typical developmental, you know, scheme is, you wouldn't really know. I've often worked with parents who have a 3, a 4, or an even older child. That child's not speaking, maybe not saying more than 5 or 10 words, and the parent wouldn't know that that is something that they might want to be concerned about, because, again, there's not really a great place for parents to get that kind of information of what's sort of typical and what should I be concerned about. Sometimes a parent can get that information from a pediatrician, and one of the things that we have in place at First Five Alameda County is child development specialists who are available at pediatric clinics to provide developmental screening for children if a parent does have even just a general question about their child's development. That's sort of a systems change approach that we're trying to implement within the county, is having child development specialists, mental health specialists, more accessible to parents in places that parents are likely to go with their children, such as pediatric clinics, such as child care centers, as Margie talked about with her program. So I think a lot of times it is hard for the parent to know. Sometimes the parents will find out because they'll have a friend, a relative, somebody else say, hey, you know, I've noticed such and such about your child. Have you noticed that too? Are you concerned? Sometimes it won't happen until the child does enter some sort of group care situation, and that's when that's the first time that the child is being seen by somebody outside of the family and is being seen by a trained child development expert, someone who has training in the child development field. And as Margie said, it'll often be the teacher who's the first one to bring it up to the parent that there is possibly something that they might want to look at. And as you can imagine, that sometimes is very hard for the parent to hear. It's the first it's the first time that they're hearing it. And I think every person's normal reaction is to be, no, not my child. That's not true. No one else said this. He's fine. His brother was this way, too. He'll grow out of it. That's sort of our normal reaction. So oftentimes that whole entry process into services, that whole realization that there should be some, you know, there might be something that we need to look at, is a very rocky start, a very difficult time for the parent, and that's when it's very critical to have the support systems in place for the parent and the child, make sure that the child is getting a proper screening, a proper evaluation, and that multiple factors are being looked at, because with every child, there's a different range of development, a different range of what's typical, cultural factors to take into in terms of what the family values are, the family expectations. All of that has to be taken into account before these decisions can be made. And as you can imagine, that takes a lot of time and a lot of expertise.
I know that the Gillian study stated that this phenomenon that we're talking about this morning, preschool expulsion, is really massive. I mean, and it's recognized in at least 40 states that it is much higher than it is through K through 12. Once you're already in school, you know, at the time in which you, most people think development really starts. Pam, I guess when your early childhood providers are receiving children into their services, are there things that they are trained to look for, or is there a, I don't want to say a screening, because screening for many people means you screen out as opposed to understanding who you have there and how to interface and interact and how to assist. But could you describe that a little bit for us?
Sure. Actually, we are required to screen all of our children, and we do a general developmental screening, which looks at speech and language, gross motor, fine motor, cognitive skills, all basic pre-educational stuff, and then we also look at social-emotional. And we use a specific tool that we sit down with parents and interview the parents based on their perspective on how their child's social-emotional development is happening. And it's a tool called Ages and Stages Screening Questionnaire, and it's wonderful and simple, and preschool teachers can do it and parents can do it. And a score on that tool will give a level of concern where we may do a referral to a mental health consultant who we have working with our program. And the joy of doing that is not to screen kids out as much as it is to identify them early where there may be a concern about their behavior, both coming from the part of the parent and from the teacher once the child gets into the classroom. Sometimes with a little bit of upfront preventative work and work between the teacher and a mental health consultant, or between the parent and a mental health consultant, we get the child in the same situation. So the same thing's happening at home as in school, and it helps to mediate some of the behaviors that we're seeing.
Margie, I know that, again, people who, in the minds of the general public, who come to the county kind of really reflect all aspects of life. And there are some assumptions that we have a more complex society than in years past, where one parent may have stayed home and really been more attentive to a child as they were developing, and now both parents can stay home for at least a reasonable period of time through those early childhood development stages. But how do you outreach prior to going into preschool and have the ability to determine what kind of added assistance may need. What is it that the county does, and who is it that you work with in order to do that kind of outreach so that even before they go into preschool, maybe there's been some contact?
Of course. I'm glad you're asking that question, Keith, because it really is early intervention. Early identification and early intervention means as early as when the baby goes home from the hospital to the home. I know that First Five has a program that visits out to the home and can follow babies and parents up to 3 years. In terms of our behavioral health care services, which is our county mental health, I want to add, though, that along with Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, Alameda County is 85% contracted. And what that means is that mental health services are with contract to our community-based organizations. One of the great advantages to that is our community-based organizations are out in the various communities, the African American community, the Latino community, the Asian community, and they're in the neighborhoods where our families are. So that's very important in our particular county in terms of outreach. Our program at Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, along with 12 to 15 other community-based organizations, provide what is called early childhood mental health therapy, which is a parent-child therapy, a caregiver-child therapy.
But hearing that term, isn't there a kind of a stigma that people put with mental?
There can be. And the way these programs are introduced is that there's a lot of parenting guidance, and we talk about parenting guidance, and we talk about children, young children, and their social and emotional development in terms of what feels right to the parent, what's working, what's not working. It's presented in a very as positive and strength-based way as possible, while naming that we understand that there has been stigma in the past. So once we begin to talk about that with parents and define what we do in a way that parents understand, it really does decrease that level of stigma. So we go out to the homes, and we go to the homes where our families live, and we see them, and we sit, and we talk in their kitchens. We work with them and follow their routine through the day, and the whole time are interacting around with the parents around their relationship with their young child. This is what needs to happen, in my opinion, before children even reach preschool. By the way, early childhood mental health services also go out to infant toddler sites out in childcare, so it doesn't start in preschool. I did want to say one quick thing about the meaning of children's behaviors. The behaviors that we saw in the Gilliam study are what we're calling externalizing behaviors, and these are aggressive behaviors. They're sort of acting out behaviors. They're referred to in that way. However, what I would really want to call to people's attention is, what about the children who don't have these aggressive acting out behaviors? The children who stay quiet, the African American, the Latino, the Asian children who are sitting in their seats saying nothing. They're not expelled, but they internally are going through a great deal of pain because of their life circumstances. And the study, it wasn't designed to target that or to identify that, but it's something that the community needs to keep in mind.
I want to highlight again something that we started the podcast off with, and that is pre-kindergarten increases high school graduation rates. Pre-kindergarten helps children do better on standardized tests, reduces grade repetition, reduces the number of children placed in special education, reduces crime and delinquency. And for those who may not have a child, and for those who might think this is only with a specific family, we're talking about an action that could inevitably affect all of us, irregardless as to our income, how much money we might have. It lowers the rate of teen pregnancy, and it leads to greater employment and higher wages as adults. And again, every dollar invested in high-quality pre-kindergarten saves a taxpayer up to dollars. I want to talk a little bit about the funding issue for the next few minutes, because the pre-child spending for a child in grades K through 12 is approximately $9,217 per year. But pre-child spending in pre-kindergarten is significantly lower. And we only have five states that provide more than $5,000 per child. And we have seven states that provide less than $2,000 per child per year. How does that work in terms of the Berkeley Albany YMCA and attempting to try to meet the challenge of the number of children, the kids who come through your program?
Thank you for asking. It's a huge challenge. For us, just providing quality care and being able to pay livable wages to our staff is a challenge, and it requires putting our federal and state monies together in order to do that and have a decent reimbursement rate, because less than $5,000 a year is not going to provide any other type of services, including it won't even provide appropriate ratios in the classroom, let alone any kind of support services that kids need. So for us, we combine federal and state money. We go out looking for grants. We work with First Five. We take whatever we can get. For some of the children for whom we provide mental health consultation, we look to see what kind of insurance they have. If they have full-scope Medi-Cal, then they may be eligible for some of the county or city of Berkeley services. But if they don't, which is the vast majority of children, then we are looking high and low. We're band-aiding things. We're really looking to First Five. We're looking for county and city mental health departments with this new monies that are coming out for mental health services to support young children and their families. You know, the kids who are under five, you can't just put them on a couch and have therapy. It doesn't work that way. You really have to work in context of the environment in which they're found, whether it's the home or the preschool, the child care. You have to be able to work in that environment. And the funding does not follow therapy into those environments easily. And so systems are going to have to change in order to meet this population, because the more you put up front, as you said, you save $7 for every $1 you invest now. And I believe if you put even more money into it now, you're going to save more money later, particularly for children who are at risk of expulsion. They're not going to get those benefits because they're not going to be in preschool. So you're going to have more problems with that population later.
And how do you attempt to approach the issue that Margie brought up, which is now a child not talking about at the facility over at Berkeley Albany YMCA, but a child is not expelled, but they are still kind of quiet. They're just in the room. And as you talk about that challenge, also just paint a picture, if you will, of what you get when you're going through the early childhood services that are provided. Many people, old school people, may think that you're babysitting. But describe what happens during the course of the day. And then, again, this challenge that is not mentioned necessarily in the study.
We have screenings and assessments, and we develop individual plans for every child and lesson plans that are based on children's assessment. This is not babysitting by any stretch of the imagination. Sometimes I think preschool is more intensive than elementary school in terms of some of the requirements of our state and federal funding sources. So teachers have far more paperwork than anybody would anticipate, and you know, our parents understand that because we have them sign off on everything. But the reality is that, you know, a quiet, shy, withdrawn child is not going to get the level of attention that an aggressive, outgoing, gregarious, in your face, beat up other kids child is going to get. It's just the nature of how group care works. So we have to have teachers that understand early childhood development and that are trained in identifying both ends of the spectrum, both the children that are withdrawn and shy and the children that are aggressive, and balance those two so the kids get an opportunity to grow developmentally in social-emotional arena so that they'll be the best that they can be.
So, Jada, I heard most of this information about preschool expulsion at our First Five board meeting maybe 2 years ago. And for some reason, there hasn't been any traction in this community about this issue. And again, maybe I'm so concerned about it because as a person on the Board of Supervisors, I understand that that child, unfortunately, may grow up and will need social services. I understand that that child may grow up and wind up at Juvenile Hall or San Quentin. I understand that that child's healthy development might not be to the level that they are as healthy as any other child. So describe how First Five, through its organization, is attempting to either outreach, inform, work in our community, and especially the harder to serve community or the community that speaks primarily another language, is attempting to get ahead of the curve, inform people, and then address the issue as it's right there in our face.
Well, one of the things is that, unfortunately, issues that have to deal with very young children have historically been ignored and disrespected in our society. I think that we as a society don't necessarily see the value and the need for these early intervention services. We tend to be much more of a treatment-minded type of society, where we would rather put a Band-Aid on the problem after the fact instead of really looking at prevention and early intervention, as all of the speakers here have talked so much about. That really is at the crux of this. At First Five Alameda County, you know, for the last 9 years, we have always been about early identification, early intervention, and preventative measures in the 0-5 community. And this study just really gives us now more of a backbone, more research behind what we have always believed, which is that those first 5 years are critical and are the foundation for a child, and that's when so much of the development is happening, that we need to put our resources there. So to that effect, we're trying to use data like this that has come out in this study, along with other data that we are gathering on our own or that we are gathering from other research areas, to put together hard facts, because that seems to be the best way to help people to understand the importance. When we can give them a number or something more concrete, like how you were able to relate, Keith, about being in a pre-K environment, how it affects all of these later risk factors, that's the type of thing that people can relate to and that they can understand better. So one of our goals is to really take this data, to integrate it, to synthesize it, and to put it out there in a way that the community can hear it and can make it somewhat relate to it. But, you know, so many of our services are really about community involvement, community engagement, getting out there to where families already are, getting out there to places that they go to, that they trust. So, for example, you know, one of the points that Margie had brought up and that you had commented on was people being, you know, the stigma attached to therapy or to mental health. So one of the things we try and do is, what can we do to go out into the community and provide the supports in a place that doesn't feel threatening, that doesn't feel new to the family? How can we, you know, how can we move away from what we would call traditional westernized therapy to really providing the services in a community-friendly way, in a culturally appropriate way that'll better meet the needs of that family? So not asking that families, you know, have to travel and come in for a 50-minute office visit, because that's not necessarily what is needed or what's going to be accepted, but how can we create the supports out there in the community already, so that the family is already getting that in the places that they're going? What can we do to support, you know, the teachers so that they don't have to take so much time off of work to get training? So maybe we place a mental health consultant on site that the teacher has access to on a regular basis, so they don't have to leave. So those are some of the ways that we try and look at what's already happening in the community, provide the supports out there, and then, you know, use this research that we have through Gilliam and through other places and translate that into a way that's hopefully relatable, that hopefully other people will also see the importance of this.
Margie, I guess kind of as the final question, have you noticed since the Gilliam study has come out, that there has been a major shift or change in Alameda County of how we approach this, or is it because of the complication around resources?
Well, both. And I'm glad you're asking that question, Keith, because I believe that what the Gilliam study has done, not just in the world of early childhood mental health, but also early care and education and other professions who work with young children 0 to 5, is that it's confirmed what we've known for some time. We know that children come to the classroom not having skills, having difficult relationships, coming from the very difficult life circumstances that I mentioned earlier, and they're placed in group care, and they begin to let us know through their behavior that they're in pain. So this study is very confirming. In terms of resources, the county, as I mentioned earlier, began about 10 years ago. One of the challenges in providing early childhood mental health services is that, as mentioned by Pam earlier, it is very much still in a treatment-based model. We need children to have Medi-Cal to be able to bill for services. Now, our county, through First Five, through Behavioral Health Care Services, through various partners, have found money, have found resources to provide what is non-billable treatment, non-billable preventative services, like mental health consultation. However, it's a drop in the bucket for what the need is out there.
40 states recognized, unfortunately, as having larger numbers for pre-kindergarten expulsion than those who are entering K through 12, a problem that is right here in our own community and across this country, a problem that not only affects that child first and foremost and their family and their community, but all of our communities. I want to thank all of you who've tuned into the podcast today. We look forward to sharing additional information in future podcasts to come about important topics that are timely, important, and informative to you, your loved ones, your family, and our community. I'm Keith Carson. On the Board of Supervisors, Alameda County, I want to thank our special guests, those who are laboring every single day to make sure that the earliest amongst us, those who are in the developmental stages, those who still can get it right and not fall into the safety net, if you will. I'd like to thank Pam Shaw, the Executive Director of the Berkeley Albany YMCA Early Childhood Services Branch. That includes Head Start. I also want to thank Margie Gutierrez-Padilla, in the Program Supervisor of the Early Childhood Consultation and Treatment Program for Alameda County Behavioral Health Care Services, and also Sajada Benzel, the Early Childhood Mental Health Manager at First Five Alameda County. Every Child Counts, for being our special guest. And again, thank you so much for this important information.
You can subscribe to this podcast, Keith Carson, Information is Power, on iTunes or Podomatic.com. Don't forget to visit our website at www.acgov.org/board/district5 or visit us on Facebook and YouTube.